Hey, welcome to Hellbent, a feminist podcast for those who resist and persist. I'm Devin.
And I'm Sarah.
And we are back after the weekend.
Oh my gosh. I feel like this weekend I was actually outside like a person.
And right.
Got sun.
Yes.
Which hasn't happened in a while.
Yeah. Sun sucks.
I mean, I personally love it.
I'm literally so white you can see through me. Like, I can't spend much time in the sun.
See, I get tanned very easily.
Yeah,
I know. So, it reminded me of when I used to play, like, soccer every day.
Right.
I was just out in the sun a lot.
Yeah.
It just felt good to be among people.
Right.
I went to the tax march.
Right.
This weekend, which we will get into.
Yes.
That was great. But yeah, it feels good to be back in the podcast chair.
Right. In the podcast chair.
Which is, for me, it's a folding chair.
It's a folding chair.
Nothing fancy, guys.
In my sad office.
Your amazing office. Devin, do you want to get into what we're going to talk about?
Yes. So first, as always, we'll start with some listener feedback.
Mm-hmm.
And we have a lot to talk about there.
Yes.
And then we go into Trumpland/GOP bullshit.
Mm.
And as always, there's a lot to talk about there too.
Always.
Are you sensing a pattern? And then after that, we're going to talk a little bit about the resistance, mm-hmm. and sort of round up what's been going on, mm-hmm. and you know, things that are happening focused on resisting Trump.
Mm-hmm.
And then we're going to go into our gratitude check.
Always needed.
Always needed. And then finally, it is Monday, and we give the Donald Trump dishonor in Dick Watery.
And you guys, there's plenty of dishonorable mentions.
Like, even more than normal.
Yeah, and I think we left people out, probably.
We did.
We're just like, we have to cap it at a certain point.
Exactly. Okay, so let's get into some listener feedback.
Yeah, so Anne, mm-hmm. on Twitter corrected us on some economic figures. She said, quick heads up, the initial monthly jobs numbers are plus or minus 100,000. So she's saying like the margin of error
right.
is there. She said numbers are revised over time. So the initial number of 90,000, which mm-hmm. I believe is what the initial jobs report was
March.
For mm-hmm. March, could end up closer to 190,000 or minus 10,000.
Right.
So that's like the margin of error. The takeaway here is these monthly numbers are an iffy gauge. Trump reality could be even worse than we thought. Only numbers well above 100,000 guarantee there was job growth, which I didn't know.
Yeah. I didn't know that either.
Uh-huh.
And so that is super interesting.
Yeah.
It's kind of like when you're trying to lose weight, anything under 5 pounds, you're like, that's water weight.
Oh, really?
Well, at least for me.
Oh, okay. I don't know. I actually never really weigh myself. Because yeah. I just go by, like, if my pants fit. And in the Trump era, my pants are not fitting.
Not fitting.
I've definitely gained the Trump 5 or 10 or 15. I don't know.
I don't know.
I have no idea. But thank you, Anne. That
yes.
was a great correction.
Yes. And then Mandy from our Facebook group, we want to let you guys know that we reached out to her,
mm-hmm.
And asked her if we could share this because we really want this group to be a safe space.
Yeah, it's a closed group. So what happens in the Facebook group is intended to stay there.
Right.
But if there are stories that we find interesting or relevant to the podcast, we just want to let you know we will reach out to you. And if you're not comfortable, that's fine.
That's
but we
fine.
Reached out to Mandy and she said, go for it.
Yeah. So she said, I've been meaning to email Devin and Sarah, but haven't done it yet. So I will just share here. On election day, I truly thought the worst had happened, at least in my 30 years thus far. I live in a very red state and have few political allies with whom to complain. A month later, my 28-year-old husband, Lance, suffered 2 large strokes. He had a craniotomy to remove a large piece of his skull. This was the only option to attempt to save his life. He survived 2 surgeries and we spent 3 months in the hospital. In February, he was able to transfer to an amazing rehab center 3 hours away from home. Each day, he works on gaining independence, learning to walk and speak again, and is trying to regain movement on his right side of his body. It has been a very difficult few months for me, and I have to say, having Hellbent has been truly amazing. Knowing there are other women out there who think like me and are as outraged as I am has made me feel less alone and has given me hope at a time when events in the world, as well as in my own family, have left me feeling very lonely and sometimes helpless. This podcast has truly given me life some days. Thank you.
Oh my God. I honestly read this and I like started crying.
I know.
I was just like, wow. Like wow. What a powerful story.
Yeah.
What a strong person and a strong family.
Yeah.
And I mean, Devin and I, I come over here and, like, we bullshit.
Yeah.
Like, we just come over and, like, try to make each other laugh in these, like, dark bananas times.
Yeah.
And it, honestly, it touches me so much that we're able to give people a sense of solidarity and, and God forbid, hope.
Hope, yeah.
Hope is important.
It is. And so, thank you for sharing that story. Our thoughts are with you and your family.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, I'm so honored that we've been able to help.
Yeah, totally. Thank you, Mandy. Speaking of the Facebook group.
Yes.
So, a woman named Karen, she made us fan art.
Yeah, which, I almost shit my pants when I saw it.
I mean, we had something on Twitter where someone made dickwads, which was great.
It was so fun.
But Karen actually drew Devin and I as, like, our superhero, like, personas.
Yeah.
Or, like, alternative
identity.
Identity. And it was amazing. And then she asked us, well, okay, now you have to come up with superpowers. And I was like, well, mine would be to dispose of dickwads.
Right, right. And I said mine would be man-eater.
Yeah, like, Devin just went there.
Like,
she was like, just, I'm not even going to.
It's fine. I like to make men cry and then eat them for breakfast. Like, not in a sexy way, just, like, literally consume them.
And just, you know, if, you know, anyone is listening, mm-hmm. that is a figure of speech.
Yeah, not that's a joke.
Not a literal.
Like, when I say Paul Manafort is my favorite person, that really means I hate him so much, I see red.
It's opposite day.
Yeah.
Yeah. So thank you, Karen. That was amazing.
It was amazing.
And if you're part of the Facebook group,
check it out.
It's on there. Speaking of the Facebook group, we are, like, 350 strong.
I know.
Which is bananas.
It's, oh my God, you guys. I had no idea. Again, Sarah and I, when we were like, we'll do a Facebook group, there'll be, like, 50 people. It'll be fun.
Yeah. I was like, even if it's just 10 people, I just can't wait to hang out.
Yeah.
But, we've grown quite a bit since the initial launch last week. And if you want to join us, you can go to our Twitter feed at HellbentPod and see the pinned tweet. There's a link there. Obviously, it's a closed group, so we, you know, admins such as myself, Devin, and then two incredible women, Crystal and Elena, we approve people. So, you know, we do a pretty thorough job of making sure we're not letting in dickwads, hopefully.
I mean, the name of the group is Dickwads Be Gone.
Dickwads Be Gone. But yeah, if you want to join, go to our Twitter page. And man, I just love this little community.
I love the community. Burgeoning. It's amazing.
Totally.
And so last, we really want to thank everyone who jumped on iTunes and gave us 5 stars and left us these amazing reviews.
Yes.
We're still getting some trolling, but this is hugely helpful to counteract that.
Yeah.
And it just warms the cockles of our hearts.
Yeah, and it just, like Devin said, it really helps sort of counteract the trolling that tends to ensue when women with opinions get on the internet.
Exactly. So thank you so much. If you guys continue to rate us 5 stars on iTunes, we would be grateful.
Yes.
Okay, Sarah, let's get into this Trump GOP bullshit.
Yeah, and we have a collection of sort of foreign policy and domestic things that are happening.
Right.
So the first thing I think that we wanted to talk about was all this North Korea bullshit.
It is scary bullshit.
It's really scary. So North Korea and, you know, Trump have been kind of going back and forth, like posturing for each other, basically. And, you know, in the past, you know, we've had a stable person in office. So at least we had that to counteract the sort of bananas-ness of North Korean leaders.
Right.
Now we have two dickwads.
Right.
Just trying to be, I don't know, show of force?
Yeah. I mean, so on Saturday, April 15th, that was the birthday of the sort of founder of North Korea.
Yeah. So it's Kim Jong-un, who's the current leader, his grandpa.
His grandpa. And they always do, like, a huge celebration and this huge, like, military parade, which is basically, you know, it amounts to, like, an international dick pic being sent. Like,
it's like, we did not ask for this.
Exactly, exactly.
international dick. You guys, I'm still reeling from that. Oh my God. But yeah, it's basically, like Devin said, like a big propaganda move. Yeah,
exactly.
And they're trying to show their military might.
Right.
So the next day, on Sunday, North Korea launched a ballistic missile test, I think. But the launch was the latest in a series of failures just after liftoff. Mm-hmm. And this is according to both American and South Korean military officials.
Right. So, you know, basically over the past 3 years.
Yeah, that's just a little bit
of background. Sorry. The covert war over the missile program has sort of been between North Korea and the United States.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, North Korea is starting to grow their nuclear program.
Mm-hmm.
And Obama ordered a surge in strikes against the missile launches.
Yeah, which the New York Times reported on last month.
Yeah, and it's unclear how successful North Korea's program has been.
Mm-hmm.
But we do know, you know, it's impossible to tell whether these launches are failing because of sabotage or bad engineering, mm-hmm, or bad luck.
Yeah.
So North Korea's launch failure rate has been extraordinarily high.
Yeah. So there's a little, we're not sure if it's correlation or causation.
Right. Exactly.
Because the North Korea has just been failing.
Right. Well, and then journalist David Schuster said that U.S. digital interference or hacking, mm-hmm, basically caused this missile launch on Sunday to fail.
Yeah, and actually Fox's Chris Wallace asked KT McFarland, who is reportedly out as the deputy, right, national security advisor,
yep,
he asked if this was true, if there was digital interference, if the U.S. intervened, and she said, you know, we can't talk about that, no comment.
Mm-hmm.
This is also on the heels of General H.R. McMaster, who is the national security advisor.
Mm-hmm.
He said on Sunday, all of our options are on the table in, mm-hmm, in regards to North Korea, which is a little concerning. You're like,
right,
that includes nuclear, and that's scary.
That's scary.
But he did emphasize that the U.S. hopes not to use military force. But again, we have Trump as commander-in-chief.
Right. Itchy trigger finger.
And like he, you know, as we saw in Iraq, he said Iraq.
Yes, it was Syria.
You guys, our president is making me less intelligent.
Oh my god, I think
but
he
as
is.
We saw in Syria, he had no problem just dropping the mother of all bombs.
Well, it was in Afghanistan.
Was it?
Yeah, and then the missile strike was in Syria.
Guys,
I know.
This is what happens. It's uh-huh. like we're 6 months in, and I am going the way of Trump.
Yeah, right?
But luckily, I have a partner who's like, actually, fact check, untrue. Point is, Trump has trigger fingers.
Yeah.
And he has no problem just, like, fucking escalating whenever yeah. he wants to. So that's a little concerning.
Well, and the U.S. has recently been leaning on China, which mm-hmm. is North Korea's main ally, to basically apply pressure to North Korea to curtail this mm-hmm. know, nuclear program. And also, and so Trump also apparently had asked the Chinese president mm-hmm. about, like, the history of North Korea, and he basically schooled him, and Trump then said, oh, it's more complicated than I thought, which, mm. like, if that sounds like we said about healthcare, it is.
You guys, TLDR / spoiler alert, everything is more complicated when you're actually governing.
Yeah, and then Trump's first comments about North Korea after the missile test came via Twitter.
Ugh, you guys, it's time for Twitter to just ban his account.
Seriously.
Like, it's just time.
Just let it go.
It's time. Yeah, and I mean, you know, this is all sort of, to give even more context, I mean, Trump just enjoys blowing shit up.
He has talked about this. And he talked about how, you know, the U.S. military needs to be more trigger happy, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing, it should be noted, that Trump's only 2 full days of good press
mm-hmm.
have come after the strike in Syria
yeah.
and the bomb in Afghanistan.
Mm-hmm.
And these two military actions don't seem to play into a larger military strategy.
Mm-hmm.
And it also shows a distinct lack of understanding of the larger issues at play.
Yep.
It's
almost like he has no government experience.
It's almost like he has no government experience.
Or, like, any good experience at that.
Yeah. Well, and then this sort of dovetails nicely into what we want to talk about next, which is, so the Syrian strike
mm-hmm.
did have an effect beyond just a show of force. You know, everyone mm. was like, oh, it's a, basically, it's just this, it's a big show.
Mm.
It's, you know, whatever. But the U.S. military has a base mm-hmm. in Al-Tanf,
mm.
which is at southern Syria by the Jordan border.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not a secret that U.S. military troops are stationed there.
Yeah.
They are there mostly in a training and support capacity for the Syrian rebels.
Mm.
And they've basically avoided any sort of conflict with the Syrians or the Russians because they're there in a support capacity.
Mm-hmm.
But basically what happened is when the Syrian strike was announced, they all left the base for fear of retaliation.
Mm.
And so they went and hid out in the desert.
Oh, wow.
Like, literally. The desert around Al-Tanf.
Mm.
So as expected, this base was attacked.
Oh, wow.
So 20 to 30 Syrian fighters, mm-hmm. some wearing suicide vests, basically attacked this base.
When did this happen?
This happened Sunday.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
I didn't see a lot of news about
this. There wasn't a lot of news about this at all.
Mm.
But three Syrian rebels that were allied with the U.S. were killed in the initial attack. And so the U.S. forces basically returned from the desert to defend the base and the area. And after 6 hours of close quarter hand-to-hand fighting, like literally like,
wow,
like movie style combat.
Wow.
The U.S. troops called in air support. And the base was successfully recaptured, basically, by U.S. troops.
Wow.
So, I mean, we're putting real lives in real danger here.
Yeah, not just on the Syrian side, but on our side as
yeah.
well. It kind of reminds me of, remember the first travel ban?
Yes.
And people, you know, on top of just it morally being repugnant
right.
on every level, people were like, hey, like, the sort of people abroad
yeah.
who are already helping the U.S., it's going to be hard to get them to
right.
keep helping us, and it's going to be hard to recruit people
right.
to keep helping us.
Exactly. Well, and then Trump did an interview with Fox Business, of all things, and he said that we're not getting involved with Syria. Okay, all right, dickwad. We've been involved in Syria since September 2014.
Mm-hmm.
We have troops on the ground in Syria, and they've been quietly adding more troops.
Mm.
So Trump obviously does not know that, does not understand that.
Trump has no context for anything.
Yeah.
No correct context.
Exactly. And has no larger strategy.
Yeah.
So, you know, this is really putting real American troops in imminent danger.
Mm-hmm.
And we need to really start to call him out on not just, you know, domestic policy, but foreign policy as well.
Yeah. That's, I think, where people are most sort of nervous
yes,
about.
Yes. Exactly.
Let's get back into the domestic side of things,
right.
Because there's a slew of stories that are concerning, at least on my end.
Oh, yeah.
So there was a New York Times story this past week about Trump's political appointees.
Yeah.
And how there's a raft of potential conflicts and, quote, no transparency.
Yeah.
So potential conflicts are sort of arising in the executive branch, according to analysis done by the New York Times in collaboration with ProPublica, who does a lot of great stories.
Right.
In at least two cases, the Trump appointments may have already led to violations of the administration's own ethics rules.
Right. So it was Michael Catanzaro and Chad Wolf.
Yeah. So Catanzaro serves as the top White House energy advisor. And until late last year, he was working as a lobbyist for major industry clients. And they were fighting Obama era environmental regulations, including the Clean Power Plan. Now he's handling some of the same matters on behalf of the federal government.
And what's interesting is Catanzaro was lobbying for Devon Energy, which is the same company that Scott Pruitt was involved with.
Interesting. Yeah. And Chad Wolf, he spent the past several years lobbying to secure funding for the TSA to spend hundreds of millions of dollars on new carry-on luggage screening device. And he's now the chief of staff at that agency, which at the same time, the device is being tested and evaluated for possible purchase by agency staff.
Right.
So, yeah, I mean, you know, this revolving door of lobbyists and government officials is not new in D.C.
Right.
Both parties make a habit
sure.
of it. But the Trump administration is more vulnerable to conflicts than the prior administration because especially, and I think this kind of went under the radar, Trump eliminated an ethics provision that prohibits lobbyists from joining agencies they lobbied
right.
in the past 2 years.
Right. Well, and also, and on top of all of that, Trump's appointees are basically richer, like have more financial assets than any, like any previous administration.
Yeah.
And the more financial ties you have, the more likely there is to be a conflict of interest.
Yeah.
The more honeypots you have your hands in, you know.
It's like a spider web. Almost.
Exactly.
So it's tougher to disentangle when you have more assets, like
right.
Devin said. And yeah, I mean, Danielle Bryan, who's the executive director of the Project on Government Oversight, she said, our worst fears are coming true. We know people coming in who have conflicts, and we cannot see what restrictions they are under, if any.
Well, Trump was going to drain the swamp, right?
Oh, yeah. How much How much swamp draining is really happening? We're filling the swamp.
My favorite tweet this week was Jake Tapper.
Yes, yes.
He said swamp status, and it was a picture of the crocodile from Peter Pan, just splashing around.
That was such a great tweet.
So good.
Sassy Tapper, like we said, is our favorite.
Our favorite
Tapper. We don't always love Jake Tapper, but when he's a sassy motherfucker, we do.
Give no fucks, Jake Tapper is like weirdly sexy.
Yeah, we're into it.
Yeah.
The last story I think we want to talk about in this sort of Trump / GOP land bullshit is, I don't know if you guys have heard of this guy. He's this sort of ringleader on the alt-right named Mike Cernovich. Mike Cernovich?
Yeah.
And he is apparently very upset by stories that, you know, noted dickwad / Nazi Steve Bannon might get ousted from, you know, the Trump administration.
I love that this amounts to some fucking dude throwing a temper tantrum about something that might happen.
You guys, again, after this whole fucking administration, I never want to hear about how women are too emotional to lead. Like, ever. They are the biggest fucking man babies
I've ever seen.
Ever. Okay, so basically, this guy threatens to, quote, drop the mother load if this does indeed happen. So I guess Devin is losing her mind.
I am. This is like, really funny.
She's literally crying laughing. So apparently, like, there have been stories of, like, Trump is, like, sort of distancing himself from Steve Bannon because, as we know, there was, like, a sort of feud between Steve Bannon and Jared Kushner. And I think at the end of the day, Trump is always going to pick J-Dog. Yeah, the Kush.
Also, the Kush. I also love that it's, like, a TMZ style, like feud, like Mariah Carey versus Nicki Minaj.
See, but this is the problem with the Trump administration.
Yeah, it's a reality
show. Actually, Carlos Maza did a really great video for Vox. He does a series called Strike Through, and he was, like, talking about how CNN, their political coverage is, like, sports / reality TV.
Yeah.
And this is clearly what this is the mood of the administration, right? Unfortunately. But basically, Cernovich said, if Bannon is removed, there are going to be divorces because I know about the mistresses, the sugar babies, the drugs, the pill popping, the orgies. I know everything.
About who?
Everyone, apparently.
Yes.
I'm like, I'm into this. I'm like, can we please kill two birds with one stone? Can we get rid of the Nazi Bannon? And can you, like, unload all the dirt?
Just dump it.
And just get everyone, like, the fuck out of
here. Yeah, dude, I would literally accept a phone call from Cernovich if he wanted to tell me any of that.
Okay, but I think we have to remind ourselves that Cernovich is also, like,
that's true,
a nut job conspiracy theorist.
Didn't know that, like, this was the same guy.
It's the same guy. So I would venture to guess that none of this shit is
no,
true.
No, you're right.
Because he's the same guy that kind of peddled the Pizzagate stuff, which obviously, like, was dangerous. Like,
it was dangerous.
And some guy came with a gun to a fucking family-owned pizza parlor. So, like, this shit is no joke. You know, and, like, actually, Alex Jones from InfoWars, he's
another wonderful fucking person.
He's the guy that claimed Sandy Hook was a hoax, which is just so awful on so many levels. But I guess he's getting sued or something because his lawyer is trying to argue that Jones is, like, a performance artist. I'm like, I wish that life was performance right now, but it's very real.
I know.
And what you say have real consequences.
I mean, I didn't like performance art when it was a thing in college, and I certainly don't like it now.
At top levels of government.
At top levels
and,
of government.
You know, far right media outlets that get traction.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So this is just another, like, little mini drama that just goes back to the fact that Trump, he's just an opportunist. He clearly winks to the alt-right.
Mm-hmm.
They're obviously upset with him when he went into Syria.
Right.
But he doesn't really have an ideology.
Right.
He has certainly, you know, made rise to increase bigotry, and that's not nothing. I'm not absolving him of that.
No.
But it's so clear that he has no set ideology that he believes in.
Exactly. And that's dangerous. I mean, that's why this whole Bannon-Kushner thing is so important, because whoever has his ear is going to direct the policy, because he doesn't care.
Yeah, and I've heard that a lot too, is, like, basically whoever gets the last word, that's what he does.
Right, exactly.
He has no moral center or fulcrum.
Well, yeah, and Trump said, quote, Steve is a good guy, but I told him to straighten it out or I will, which is also such, like, a weirdly paternalistic, like, avuncular thing to say.
Everything is creepy
about
this.
It's so creepy. And the thing, I also read something a while ago that was, like, Trump is sort of embodying this, like dad slash avuncular figure mm-hmm. that America wants right now to, like, take care of us. And, like, and I'm just like, first of all, ew.
No.
Second of all, that does not sound like anything like what I want.
Yeah, it's this quote-unquote strong man, but actually he's the weakest fucking person.
Right. He has no... If you don't stand for anything, you'll fall for everything.
Yep. And he just is morally depraved.
Okay, Sarah, so that was a ton of weird shit to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
So let's get into, like, the resistance and what's going on right the now. Other side. Yeah.
Yeah, we wanted to do a little resistance roundup because there's a few stories here that I think are really interesting slash hopefully bode well for the resistance. So, like I mentioned at the top of the show, there was a tax march this weekend, which I went to. There's also a March for Science next weekend.
Yes.
So look into your local marches and see where and when those will be taking place, I believe, next Saturday. Indivisible, the Indivisible guy, they tweeted that there was 150,000 protesters across the country.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, basically people demonstrated to and demanded that Trump release his tax returns. And this was, April 15th is kind of known as Tax Day, but I believe the deadline is the 18th.
Yeah, it's always, if it falls the on a Tuesday. Weekend, it's, yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, Trump, we can tell it got to him because he tweeted... Someone should look into who paid for the small organized rallies yesterday. The election is over. Which, this is the guy who won't stop talking about the popular vote.
Oh my God.
Like, he's not over the election.
He is not.
Yeah, and this is important because, you know, presidents are, they're not required to release their tax returns, but they've done so voluntarily dating back to, like, the 70s. I mean, even fucking Nixon did it.
Right. Okay? Well, and it's really the only way that you can show that there are no conflict of interest, or if there are, how you can resolve them.
Yeah. Interestingly enough, there's a nonprofit group called the Electronic Privacy Information Center who filed suit in a DC federal court on Saturday over the tax returns. They're arguing that there is a provision in IRS regulations that allow their release. So I don't know how far they'll be able to go. Mm-hmm. I mean, just a reminder, the Ways and Means Committee voted 3 times because they can force Trump to release his tax returns. They have that power.
Right.
And they voted basically along party lines. So that sort of, you know, measure got voted down 3 times.
Right.
But you guys might not know this, but 26 states are considering bills to require the president to release tax returns. And I think this is more talking about future elections.
Yes.
So, like, stipulating that presidential candidates, if they want to get on the ballot, they'd have to release 5 years of tax returns at least 2 months before the election.
Right. Well, and it's interesting because even if one state passes that,
that's huge.
That's huge because then
you lose those electoral votes, basically, if you don't
release them. And if you do, even if it's just one state, everyone will then have them.
Yeah, it's interesting because New Jersey, I believe, have passed it in both bodies. But obviously they have a Republican governor right now in Chris Christie who will likely veto it, but he's up.
Right.
Right? And so there's a chance to flip that to a Democrat. But anyway, like we said, 26 states are considering bills. I would highly recommend going to ourstates.org. So ourstates.org. They, not only can you find out how to push your state legislators on this particular thing, but they have a whole slew of issues. It is a really well done site.
Yeah.
Like, you can click on, you know, immigration, and they give you, and then you click on your state, and they give you all the bills that are being considered or that are in the process. It's really good. Like we said, politics is super local, and, like, your state especially, they don't get a lot of calls.
Right. And so, and they want to hear from you.
Mm-hmm.
Local politics, guys, is sexy.
Yeah, so go to ourstates.org. It's a really impressive tool. I believe it comes from the folks who are Campaign Zero.
Yeah.
So it's really, really good. My sign at the march, I can't take credit for it because I saw it on Twitter, but my sign at the tax march was Mar-a-Lago, fuck yourself.
Yeah.
I felt pretty good about that.
Yeah, it was pretty
good. Just took a subtle approach.
Right, really subtle.
Really subtle.
Speaking of, there was an pro-Trump rally in Berkeley, and counter-protesters showed up, and basically it turned violent.
Mm-hmm. And this is, if you guys remember, there was a similar thing that happened when Milo mm-hmm. came to Berkeley.
Right.
And they ended up canceling his speech.
Because there was violence. Mm-hmm. So, basically, hundreds of people were gathered for this pro-Trump rally, and there were loud explosions and fistfights among members of both groups.
Mm-hmm.
And the Berkeley police were wearing riot helmets, and they separated the pro- and anti-Trump protesters, basically.
It's interesting because I read an Esquire article that said that, like, pro-Trump and anti-Trump isn't necessarily, like, the most accurate way to cut it. They said it's, like, basically, like, white supremacists or alt-right versus, like, anti-fascist. And this is, like, something that has been going on for a while.
Right.
And there might be, like, a Venn diagram of overlap.
Right. Yeah, I mean, it's super interesting to keep in mind. But the way it was reported was yeah. So, I mean, obviously, this is a scary time and people are really amped up.
Mm-hmm.
But I will say, violent protests only give fodder to the people that are trying to criminalize protest.
Yeah.
And I realize this isn't everyone.
Yeah.
And I realize this is an isolated incident. You know, but actually, Sarah and I just witnessed a very small pro-Trump rally.
Yeah.
And it was scary.
Yeah, it was like 3 or 4 people, and it was actually outside of the Maxine Waters mm-hmm. event. And as we were walking by, there were, it was like a white guy and a Hispanic guy who were mm-hmm. pro-Trump. And the white guy was like Facebook Live-ing it or something. Mm-hmm. And they were sort of getting into it with a group of black people.
Mm-hmm.
And we just kind of sat there and watched. Like, at first I was trying to be like, intervene a little bit.
Yeah.
I was like, don't talk to them that way. But I found that didn't help de-escalate.
Right.
So it was strange to know what the right thing to do in that situation was.
Yeah. I mean, the best way to take the wind out of those mm-hmm. sails is to ignore them. They want attention.
Yeah. And see, I have a hard time with that being sort of the right thing all the time mm-hmm. because, you know, online, you know, when women or people of color or, you know, especially women of color or just any member of a marginalized group, underrepresented group, when they get trolled, a lot of times people say, oh, ignore the trolls, don't feed them.
Mm.
But that never solved anything. We literally elected a troll.
No, that's
true. But I think that, but yeah, you're right, though. Like, these kind of sort of counter-protesters, the sort of pro-Trump mm-hmm. or white supremacist type, they're looking for things to escalate because then they get the media attention.
Exactly. And so, and I think online is something totally different, like mm-hmm. reporting and, you know, being mm-hmm. safe and obviously being safe in person too. But mm-hmm. when it comes to in-person protesters, they want your attention so badly. And mm-hmm. if you don't give it to them, it's amazing to see how fast they just shut down.
Yeah. And I get that. I just don't know where I fall on that because I don't know that I feel like ignoring them. I guess there are other ways to not ignore them.
Right.
To shed light on the issue. That's my worry. If you ignore them, are you not shedding light on the issue?
Right.
But yeah, I see the point of in the moment, what they're looking for is an escalation so that they can get those stories out there.
Exactly. And so if you just don't engage with them, at least directly, I think there are other ways to successfully counter protest.
Yeah.
But especially in the case, violence happens when people get up in each other's faces mm-hmm. and start yelling at each other.
Yeah, I mean, this is like a big philosophical thing, I think.
It is.
That we, I think, will obviously keep talking about. Hopefully things don't turn violent, but you're right. And this is like what dovetails into people, you know, introducing bills and state legislators mm-hmm. about it being okay to run over protesters.
Right, exactly.
Because they're like, oh, shit's getting violent.
Right.
Or, you know, this is an inconvenience. And, like, that's some really nefarious, scary shit.
Right.
But, yeah, I mean, it's, you know, tensions are high.
Yeah.
Like, this country, I mean, obviously we feel very strongly anti-Trump. And, like, we don't want to see this country go down the path that we're going.
Right.
So, clearly, you know, people are going to have pretty strong feelings there. But yeah, it's interesting because I went to Berkeley.
Yeah.
And it's like the most fucking liberal place ever.
Right.
But like, I think that's why these guys pick Berkeley.
Absolutely. Because mm-hmm. they know that people are really mm-hmm. Focused.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Let's go into some more positive news.
Yes.
So as you guys might know, John Ossoff, who is the Democrat running in the Georgia 6th election, this election is happening on Tuesday. So we're recording on a Monday. So technically it's tomorrow.
Tomorrow.
Yeah, this is going to be very interesting. Mm-hmm. As you remember, the Kansas race was much closer than people thought.
Dude, we made the GOP sweat bullets.
Yeah.
Like smelly anxiety sweat.
The difference here is this is a quote-unquote jungle primary, so right. If no candidate gets over 50%, there will be a runoff in right. June, and I think people are trying to get Ossoff over the 50% mark. They're really bullish about that because I think that Republicans have more of a chance if it's just two people running right. against each other.
Right.
So just a little FYI, the Georgia 6 hasn't been held by Democrats since the 70s. And again, a reminder, Trump only won this district by 1.5, and Romney took it in 2012 by plus 24.
Yeah. And Ossoff currently is polling in the mid to low 40s,
mm-hmm.
Which is so close.
Yeah.
So close to what he
needs. Special elections, like, you can really sneak a win in
you
there.
You really can. We saw it in the LA mm-hmm. special elections. Mm-hmm. On was mm-hmm. was polling at like 1% yep. and then pulled out to like
19 or something.
Yeah.
Yes, but it's bananas because he's received over 200,000 individual donations, or at least close to it,
mm-hmm.
and has an overall haul of 8.3 million. So they've been able to really like blitz the radio ads.
Right. Oh, speaking of radio ads, Samuel L. Jackson
yeah.
recorded a DCCC radio ad for the district. Quote, remember what happened the last time people stayed home? We got stuck with Trump.
Yeah, so ugh. They brought in the big guns.
The big guns.
Samuel L. Jackson.
Yeah.
And speaking some truth. The Atlantic Journal Constitution did a really interesting blog post mm-hmm. on this district. They said that the Georgia 6th is a demographic outlier in Georgia.
Mm.
So 60% of the voters in the district have college degrees versus 29% of voters in Georgia. And as we saw in the 2016 election, the gap between educated voters and non-educated voters was a lot wider than in previous elections.
Right.
So more educated voters went Democrat than had before.
Right.
A lot of like educated white people
right.
tend to go Republican.
Republican.
Mm-hmm. This district also has a 5% poverty rate compared to an 18% poverty rate for Georgia as a whole. They also have more white, Latino, and Asian voters than the rest of the state.
Right. So, you know, obviously these demographics will play into,
mm-hmm.
you know,
yeah.
the outcome of this race.
I loved one quote from a local resident in a deeply red neighborhood. She said, I have not seen public support like this for a Democrat in the 15 years I've lived here.
Yeah.
So there really is an opportunity to sneak a Democrat in, but he's got to get over 50%.
Yeah.
And right now, he's just under it.
I know.
So we'll see. I mean, we'll see, though.
We're pulling.
Yeah.
We're pulling for John Ossoff.
Yep. So check that tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
On a similar note, House Democrats have raked in record donations amid this, you know, Trump resistance backlash.
Yeah. So the DCCC raised $31 million in the first quarter of the year.
Yeah.
Which includes $13.2 million in March alone.
Yeah. So they still trail their sort of Republican counterpart, the National Republican Congressional Committee, which raised $36 million in the first quarter.
Mm-hmm.
However, the DCCC massively outpaced them in online fundraising over this same, you know, 3-month period.
Mm-hmm.
And they brought in like $13.7 million compared to the Republicans' $1.7 million, which came from 750,000 individual contributions, including gifts from 121,000 first-time donors.
Right. So people are pissed.
They're motivated.
And motivated. And a DCCC spokesman said, quote, another clear sign that the grassroots energy is behind House Democrats in this cycle.
Mm-hmm.
And then Act Blue, which is the site that processes the donations to Democratic candidates and causes.
I think that they're like a separate thing.
Yes, they yeah. are. They're like a credit card processing company,
mm-hmm.
but they're the one that handle it.
Mm-hmm.
Said that it had processed more than $111 million in online donations in the first quarter of the year. That is 4 times the total haul in the first quarter of 2015, which was the last non-election year.
Yeah, so, I mean, clearly, like we said, people are fucking ready to go.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we discussed this in our Patreon.
Yes.
We talked about people were sort of pissed at the DCCC for not putting in more money in the Kansas race.
Right.
Although these fundraising totals are impressive, we still need more money right. to actually be able to compete in every single district. So
right.
the DCCC has to be strategic about where they allocate resources. They right. see somewhere like Georgia 6, where Hillary Clinton only lost by 1.5, and they're like that's, yes. that's more of an opportunity. Now, James Thompson did amazing.
He did.
Like, I think that, as Jon Favreau said from yeah. Pod Save America, none of your whiny takes are going to be make me upset about the result of the Kansas election
right.
because this is, we're paraphrasing, but he said none of your whiny takes.
Yeah, like,
this,
shut up.
this bodes well for 2018.
Well, yeah, and even though the DCCC raised $31 million, that's still not $36 million, which is what the Republican mm-hmm. counterpart wrote, mm-hmm. raised.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, you know.
We still got some ways to go, but things are looking good. Things
looking
are trending
good.
Upward. And we will be watching this Georgia race very closely.
Yes.
And then we'll be talking about the Montana special election in the coming episodes. We've
Absolutely.
Discussed it before, but we're going to keep
closer
tabs.
We're going to keep talking about it. Yeah.
All right, Devin, let's get into my favorite block besides
oh, yeah.
the Maxine Waters, you know, award every
mm-hmm.
week. Let's get into our gratitude check. What are you grateful for today?
Well, so first of all, you guys, I saw this in the Los Angeles Times. There is a nerd gym in North Hollywood. So it's a gym.
What does that even mean?
Okay, so it's all Dungeons and Dragons and Harry Potter and Star Wars themed.
Like workouts?
Like workouts.
Oh my God.
And
wait, can you play Quidditch?
Well, I don't know. But I do know that they theme them and they make them like a game. They gamify it.
That's
and,
awesome.
I cannot tell you how obsessed I am with this.
Wait, have you gone?
No, but I'm going to.
Is this a new thing?
No, apparently not.
Oh.
It's been open for quite some time, but it just got written up and it looks amazing.
Oh my gosh.
And then sort of on that vein, there's a Star Wars celebration in Orlando for the 40th anniversary. And they did a really beautiful tribute to Carrie Fisher.
Mm.
And like I said before, Carrie Fisher has been like a real role model for me.
Yeah.
She was the one who really inspired me to be more open about my struggle with bipolar disorder.
Yeah.
And she was definitely my kind of feminist.
I've heard a lot of women who have mental health things that they're taking care of, they always point to Carrie Fisher.
Yeah.
And I honestly didn't realize how much of a trailblazer she was in
yeah.
that respect until she passed.
Yeah, she was amazing. And I remember I read her book, Wishful Drinking, years ago. And honestly, it was like, it was a life changer. Like, yeah.
That's
and
awesome.
So that's how I kind of like got the push to do it.
Have you seen the HBO documentary on her and Debbie Reynolds
no.
yet? I've been meaning to watch
yeah,
it, but I heard it was really good.
Yeah. And then last, there are two California assemblywomen who are introducing legislation that would remove taxes from tampons and diapers and other feminine products, and in exchange, raise taxes on alcohol to offset the cost. So the assemblywoman Christina Garcia from Bell Gardens and Lorena Gonzalez-Fletcher from San Diego are introducing this bill. Their tagline is, it's time to tax liquor before ladies.
I love that.
They do kind of face an uphill battle from the liquor lobby.
There's a lobby for everything.
Yeah. And apparently this one's like really strong in California. There was another assemblywoman, Susan Bonilla, who proposed raising the alcohol tax in 2015 to boost services for the developmentally disabled. And
it was like a nickel, right?
It was a nickel on
per cocktail.
Yeah, it was like nothing. Mm-hmm. And the alcohol lobby like smacked it down.
Wow.
And it's also kind of interesting because 61% of California residents have backed hiking alcohol. Alcohol taxes. And the most recent survey in November 2014 actually found 68% are in support of it.
They're just running to roadblocks with like special interests
yes.
that sort of help get people elected or stay elected.
Exactly. And it's just really annoying because taxing diapers and feminine products is so stupid.
Well, it's, you know, it's gendered.
It's gendered.
It disproportionately affects women.
Right.
And yeah, like this seems like a great solution.
Right, exactly. And so hopefully we can get some traction with that.
Yeah. And like we mentioned earlier, ourstates.org, they will.
Yes.
I don't know if they have this bill specifically.
Right.
But they will have a lot of bills related to issues. They probably have this bill on their
right.
website. And they give a really good guide on how you can push your your state legislators.
Right, so exactly.
Call them.
Exactly. And a lot of these, like, feminist issues mm-hmm. and, you know, gendered issues do happen, again, at the state level.
It really affects local politics, I think, affects people's lives a lot more.
A lot more.
In a lot of ways than national politics.
Absolutely. Okay, so Sarah, what are you grateful for this week, or today at least?
Yeah, well, I mean, speaking of local politics, one of my favorite stories in the past few days was about Democrats in Illinois. They just unseated a whole bunch of fucking Republicans. And you know I'm here for that.
Oh, yeah.
I'm here for Republicans getting shouted down at their town halls. And I'm here for Republicans getting unseated.
Unseated.
So, yeah, these were local races. But, again, they do fit with this sort of emerging trend that could mean big trouble for the GOP in 2018.
Yeah. Oh, the GOP is shaking in their fucking boots.
I fucking hope so. So the city of Kankakee elected its first Black Democratic mayor. Elgin Township voted for a, quote, complete changeover, and they flipped to an all-Democratic board.
I just pumped my fist in the air.
Yeah. There's a city called Normal, Illinois, which I'm like...
That's amazing.
Nothing is normal this administration, but I love that this is the town's name. So Normal Township elected Democratic supervisors and trustees to run its board, the first time in over 100 years that a single Democrat has held a seat.
What?
Yeah. And then West Deerfield Township will be led entirely by Democrats for the first time.
What?
Yeah. And so Dan Kovats, who's mm-hmm. the executive director of the Illinois Democratic County Chairman's Association, he said, "We won in areas Republicans never expected us to be competitive in. They were caught flat-footed."
Yeah.
And, you know, just taking it back to Kansas for a hot sec, there was a man who works for Target Smart
right.
who had tweeted, like, there are, like, 100 Republicans who wouldn't have been able to survive the swing that we saw in Kansas.
Right.
And so we see this a little bit in Illinois. Like, they Absolutely. Took over. They had a big swing, and they unseated a whole bunch of fucking Republicans.
Right.
I think my favorite part of this story is that a number of the Democrats who just won got a boost from a program that was launched recently by Representative Sherry Bustos, who's from Illinois.
Mm-hmm.
It's called Build the Bench.
Oh.
And yeah, 12 sort of graduates of this boot camp,
uh-huh.
they ran for local seats in this election cycle, and 8 of them won.
That's amazing.
Yeah. So these, like, grassroots organizing groups, which again are very much female-led, female-fronted,
mm-hmm.
sort of doing the behind-the-scenes work
right.
of boosting people.
Nancy Pelosi-ing the shit out of this.
Yes. They are really planting the seeds for this sort of Democratic uprising.
Absolutely.
And just a quick note, speaking of women doing the work, Hillary Clinton handed over her email list to the DNC, which had 10 million names not already on file.
Yep.
So again, women doing the fucking teamwork.
Right.
Bernie Sanders. Sorry, just got something in my throat.
But, oh, Bernard, you're the fucking worst.
Bernard. So yeah, I just love this story, and I thought it was great. And the second thing I wanted to talk about is we saw Maxine Waters on Thursday.
Yes, we did.
And we talked about it on our last Thursday podcast, but obviously the event was in the evening, so we couldn't do a recap. So I just wanted right. to give a little recap because seriously, she was straight fire.
First, before we get to it, she had laryngitis.
No, she powered through this thing and she literally was sipping tea.
The whole time.
Like, literally and figuratively.
And she was wearing a white pantsuit. Ugh, and she looked like a goddess angel.
Yeah, she looked amazing. So we live tweeted it.
Yes.
And I'm actually signed up to go to my rep's Ted Lieu's town hall on Thursday. So we're right. probably going to try to live tweet that
mm-hmm.
As well.
And I'm probably not going to go because we want to save room for the actual like constituents yes. of that district.
Yes.
But next time Brad Sherman has a town hall, you know I'll be there.
Yeah. So just a few gems from this whole entire talk. So Maxine said, somehow Trump thinks he was elected king. He doesn't get to use the military any way he wants to use it. It's like, yes.
Yes.
And then she, in terms of sort of the Trump administration, she said, they're talking a big talk when they say there's a new sheriff in town. Well, sheriffs can go to jail too.
As California just proved. We just put a sheriff in jail.
Did we really? Yeah. Mm-hmm. I did not know that. Yeah. And she also said, when we're finished with Trump, we go after Pence. She's like, she's not satisfied. No. I agree. I think they're all
fucking corrupt. Well, and she also said something along the lines of, like, I say impeached, and my colleagues, you know, are like, don't say that, shh. And her constituents are like, go get him.
Yeah, she's like, my constituents call my office, and they say, go get him. And then the last thing I love that she said, because apparently, I guess there was a Salon article last week that was like, Maxine Waters should run for president. And mm-hmm. so the journalist who was moderating this conversation, she said, are you going to run for president? Mm-hmm. She said, I won't run for president, but I'm going to fix it so that you can run for president. And yeah. I just love that.
Yeah.
Again, it's women sort of lifting others up and doing the essential behind the scenes work.
Absolutely.
Yeah. But obviously she's very public right now, and she's deservingly so.
Absolutely.
Also, we got a picture with her after.
Yes.
And we told her we talk about her on our podcast all the time. And she grabbed my hand, actually.
Yeah.
She squeezed my hand. She said, keep talking and go get him.
Yes.
And we're like, yes.
Yes.
If Maxine says keep talking and go get him, we're gonna keep
doing that. You know what? We're just going to keep talking to her until we turn blue.
Yeah. We will listen to you.
Okay, Sarah, so now that we've had some, like, positive...
Right, we can't stay in this zone for too long because we live under the Trump era.
Exactly. So it is now time to award the losers of the Donald Trump dishonor and Dick Watery.
Yeah, and we have a lot of dishonorable mentions.
We do. So would you like to kick it off for us?
Yes. So our first dishonorable mention is the New York Times. And we've given a dishonorable mention to them before. I don't know if you guys saw this, but they hired climate denier Brett Stevens as, like, a columnist.
Yeah, I saw that.
He's also referred to the, quote, disease of the Arab mind, and then also called Obama's nuclear deal with Iran worse than appeasing Hitler. So he is just a factory of terrible takes.
I think he and Sean Spicer would, like, get lunch and, like, should just
be best friends.
Be best friends, yeah.
Yeah, and so people were like, hey, New York Times, I thought you were, like, fighting fake news. Why are you hiring this extreme climate denier on top of other things, you know? And the New York Times defended their hire and said, basically, millions of people agree with him. And it's like, millions of people agree with all kinds of ridiculous bullshit. It doesn't mean you should hire those who peddle it.
Yeah.
And I find this, it's very frustrating because I find that quote-unquote liberal outlets, and we've talked about this before, that the New York Times isn't really that...
It's really not.
Progressive.
Never has been.
they try to sort of balance their coverage by hiring people on the other side. And I just... from this election, you're not telling sort of quote-unquote both sides of the story. It's not balanced if the other side is just batshit bananas.
Right. Well, and I also think that...
Like, doesn't believe in facts.
Yeah. I mean, I think that you know, objectivity is a myth in journalism. Obviously, you're always going to have... You're going to put some of your personal take into it. But I do think that these large publications like the New York Times, the Washington Post...
They have a responsibility.
Yeah, they have a responsibility to try to report neutrally. And again, it's not perfect. But, like, you don't need to, like, go to these extremes.
Yeah, you don't need to give people like that a platform.
Exactly. Like, please stop.
And I have lots of feelings about objectivity. I'm really glad that you said it's a myth. Because I think that you can try to be sort of fair in your coverage.
Sure.
But the editorial choices you make come from biases.
Exactly.
It's why certain stories get undercovered and other stories get blown out of the proportion.
Right.
And like we've talked about before... The media is dominated by white men.
Right.
And so those editorial decisions are very much reflected upon a dominant group that is in an industry that is largely homogenous.
Exactly. So just something to keep in mind when reading news. Okay. So our next dishonorable mention is he's noted dickwad.
Yep.
Stephen Miller.
He's from Santa Monica.
He's from Santa Monica and his last name is Miller, which is my maiden name. And it's really making me angry.
So many Devins, so many Millers.
Like, stop it. So he is now working on, quote, women's issues with Ivanka Trump.
Ugh.
And in 2005, he wrote this. It was called Sorry Feminists.
Oh, God.
He claimed that the gender pay gap is a myth. Women make less than men, Miller argues, because men work longer hours, choose higher paying jobs, and take on more dangerous work. This is also the dude that went on cable news to whine about how nobody liked him in high school and college.
All goes back to just being rejected by women and just resenting it.
Well, I have a pretty good theory as to why that might have been.
Because he's a dickwad?
Yeah, and I really wonder if it, like, burns his buns to be working for a woman, Ivanka Trump.
Well, I just feel like... I mean, A, that's the most basic take ever, that, like, the gender pay gap is not real because women don't choose higher paying jobs. Like, there's so much data that counters that. I don't even have time to go into it because I have data on data.
Yeah, I wish you could see my face.
Yeah.
It's not great.
Also, apparently, the Trump administration, Betsy DeVos is, like, one of her civil rights hires.
Yeah.
Once wrote that she was discriminated based on being white, and it's like, no, reverse racism is not a thing. So I just feel like this is just the Onion article end of how we feel like this era is. It's like a pay gap denier is working on women's issues, and a woman who thinks she's discriminated against because she's white is now working in the civil rights division of the Department of Education. Like, I'm like, get me out of this reality, please.
Yeah, we're basically in a dumpster fire.
Yep.
Also, I would just like to say that Stephanie Chirac, president of Emily's List, called Miller a, quote, well-documented misogynist, which really feels like the print-appropriate version of noted dickwad.
Yeah, and I think that's really our aim, is to get noted dickwad into the sort of mainstream.
Lexicon.
Yeah, into the lexicon. So we'll be working on that.
Yes.
Another dishonorable mention is Utah Judge Thomas Lowe.
Blech.
He basically forced a sexual assault survivor to hear him call her convicted rapist, quote, an extraordinarily good man, before sentencing this guy to prison this week.
Okay, so this is a trend in
a bad one.
A bad one. In people basically calling rapists, like, good people, except for the fact that they rape.
Yeah, and that's and I think that is a misconception.
Yeah.
Is people think that rapists are, like, these guys who hide behind dumpsters and, like, surprise women. They're men we know.
Right.
And they're, you know, obviously it's not just men who are rapists. Women can assault people too.
The
numbers are much lower.
Right.
But again, I think that's important to note, because I think a lot of men who are assaulted don't get believed.
That's true.
That being said, you know, rape and sexual assault disproportionately happens to women.
Right. And you can't be a good person besides the fact that you rape.
No, like, you're a bad person.
You're a bad person.
And that's the problem, is seemingly decent, quote unquote, men can be rapists. They often are rapists.
Yep.
They're men we know. So this is just bullshit. And again, it sort of is valuing sort of a man's life.
Yeah.
And what he's going through. And,
right.
Oh, but he's a good person over a victim who went through one of the most horrific things. So,
right.
And it's a judge. It's a fucking judge. So anyway, fuck you, Thomas Lowe. Noted dickwad, Utah judge. On a related note, there was a Louisiana district attorney, Leon Cannizzaro, who's a fucking Democrat.
He's a fucking Democrat.
Again, dickwads can be on our side of the aisle too.
Yeah.
He said that rape survivors will go to jail if they refuse to testify in Louisiana.
Okay, so District Attorney Devin Anderson, you guys, we need to stop.
Stop with the Devins, stop with the Millers, giving her a bad name.
So District Attorney Devin Anderson in Houston did the same thing last year. The girl ran from the courtroom and stood in traffic in an attempt to commit suicide.
Yeah, like, forcing rape victims to testify. That is such a misunderstanding, like, of the mental trauma.
Right. Like, what? Like, again, this goes back to, we're calling rapists good people.
Mm-hmm.
And we're saying that women who are raped or sexually assaulted are bad people.
Right. And if you don't testify, somehow it almost feels like it's your fault, or we don't believe you.
Right.
If you're not willing to testify, then how can this be true? And
exactly.
It's like, they're really underestimating, A, how few rape convictions actually go through.
Yep.
And it feeds into the cycle of women feeling like they won't be believed. And then B, misunderstanding, like we said, the trauma that follows sexual assault. And yeah, it's just not an effective tactic. And it's clearly, again, it's men who don't under fucking stand.
Right, exactly.
They just have no, they're out of their scope here.
Right. And so then this week's loser.
Yes, our dickwad of the week, the Donald Trump dishonor and dickwadery.
Is noted dickwad Andrew Sullivan.
Yep.
So he wrote a piece for New York Magazine called, and I'm quoting, "Why Do Democrats Feel Sorry for Hillary Clinton?"
You guys, it's April, and we're still seeing fucking articles blaming Hillary Clinton for Trump's election. And whenever I see shit like this, it's the translation is always, how dare a woman run for president?
Right.
We fucking punish women for seeking power, and then we tar and feather them, God forbid, if they lose. It's all their fucking fault.
Right.
And it's just so boring.
It's so boring.
This take is so stupid and boring. Like, at this point, men, if you still hate Hillary, And if you ever really fucking just hated her for no reason, seek help.
Seriously. Like, this is a you problem.
This is a you problem. And we're just, I'm so sick of seeing articles like this.
But it's that's just also boring. True. Like, I read this article for the purposes of this, and it was fucking boring.
It was just, you guys, misogyny is nothing if not boring. It's never new or interesting. Yeah. It's the same shit rebranded in different ways.
Right. Intellectual laziness.
It's, you guys, again, white men are nothing if not intellectually lazy. Right. And I love what Josh Gondelman, a Last Week Tonight writer, wrote. He said, half of newspaper columns should be called, if I Googled this topic, I'd realize I'm the asshole here. Because the other thing we want to talk about, buried in the story toward the bottom, as if, you know, being a noted dickwad misogynist wasn't enough.
No, I mean, he really needs to, like, level up his game.
He leveled up. There was also a lazy racist trope, because why not, you know? He basically asked this sort of, you know, bullshit cliche, you know, why Asian Americans have done better economically than Black Americans. And again, this is just intellectual laziness.
And this is just such, like, he starts on one thing and goes off on this weird tangent that really makes no sense.
It
made no sense.
It's just white men white menning.
Yeah, if it sounds confusing to you, congratulations.
Yeah. I want to read part of a thread that Washington Post writer Jeff Guo wrote. He said, in response to this sort of lazy trope that was in there toward the end, sort of comparing Asian Americans to Black Americans, he said, there were a lot of incentives for the white mainstream to champion and promote stories of Asian American success after World War II. Elevating Asian Americans as, quote, deserving and, quote, hardworking was a tactic to denigrate African Americans.
Right.
This is why the, quote, model minority label is so distasteful. Mm. It is a status conferred by the majority for the majority's own purposes.
Mm-hmm.
Sullivan is right that by the mid-1900s, Asian Americans had better levels of education, on average, than African Americans. I wonder why. Could it be that Asian Americans and African Americans had wildly different experiences throughout American history? Yes, both populations experienced brutal racism. There were terrible lynchings of Asian immigrants in the 1800s, for instance. But you can't seriously be drawing a comparison between immigrants who came of their own accord and the descendants of slaves.
Yeah.
Which I just feel like sums it up nicely.
Beautifully.
And like Jeff Gondelman said on Last Week Tonight, like, if Andrew Sullivan had just fucking Googled this topic, he would realize his whole fucking column, especially this part, was bullshit.
I mean, I feel like if Andrew Sullivan, like, thought through this article, he might realize that he's the asshole.
But that's the thing. And it goes, I don't think we talked about this on the podcast, but there was a great L article this week about how men are bad at apologizing. Yeah. And it's not that they're incapable of apologizing. It's that they're incapable of thinking that they're wrong.
Right. They think they're right. And so that's why they don't apologize.
There's just this tunnel vision of righteousness.
Right.
And we see this on the left especially.
Absolutely. Horseshoe theory of politics.
And this sort of righteousness that they have. They think they're right. They think no one has ever thought this through. They think their ideas are new and interesting and edgy. And it's literally just the same boring shit. It's
the same boring shit, guys.
And the problem is they don't listen to scholars who have studied this who happen to usually be women and or people of color.
Right.
And, you know, other members of underrepresented groups. So the same cycle keeps happening where it's like literally if you just Googled this and read some shit,
you realize that you're the asshole in the situation.
No, but that never happens.
That never happens.
Because they're never wrong, Devin.
Oh, of course.
Yeah.
You're right. Why didn't I realize that sooner?
Oh, man, we should just stop this podcast.
Right?
Because they're just always right.
Oh, man. Okay, guys. Well, I think that's it for us. We are going to be discussing a few things on Patreon that we had to cut.
Yes.
Including Trump's fundraising efforts and a few other very banana stories.
Yeah. So if you're a $5 patron and up, you get access to all kinds of exclusive content like that. So thanks for listening to this podcast, and we will see you on Thursday.
For more information on today's episode, please visit our website at www.hellbentpodcast.com. You'll find the articles we've discussed as well as additional resources. You can follow us on Twitter at hellbentpod, and you can follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/hellbentpodcast. You can follow Devin on Twitter at Devin Handy, and you can follow Sarah on Twitter at Sarah Lerner.
Please listen on iTunes and rate us 5 stars, because that's just like the rules of feminism. We also have a Patreon, and you can find us at patreon.com/hellbentpodcast. You can support us for as little as $1 a month, and for $5 a month, you get access to exclusive content, mini podcasts, and behind-the-scenes looks at the making of Hellbent. And there are lots of other fun rewards for higher levels of patronage, including a monthly Skype session with Devin and Sarah.
And for that one, drinking is optional.
Optional.
Quote unquote.